For today's show, we're pulling a segment out of our archives. Enjoy. I'm Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KVCR. Thanks for listening. With the holidays upon us, and with our very snowy climate here in Southern California, well, okay, not exactly snowy, unless you're in our local mountains, and even there it may just be icy. But nonetheless, it's the time of year when we see a lot more snowmen, either on TV or on lawns, some made of snow, some made of plastic. I really enjoy artwork of snowmen, so it got me thinking about the snowman and its origin. We reached out to a snowman expert, and Bob Eckstein answered the call. Here's my conversation with cartoonist, illustrator, and writer, Bob Eckstein.
Frosty the Snowman was a jolly, happy soul, with a corncob pipe and a button nose.
My guest is illustrator, cartoonist, writer, and snowman expert, Bob Eckstein. Welcome to Lifestyles.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Your work has been featured in the New York Times, Mad Magazine, and the New Yorker, to name just a few. You're the author of The History of the Snowman and The Illustrated History of the Snowman. How and why did you decide to become an expert on the snowman?
You know, I actually stumbled across it. I was interested in history, and I wanted to write a book. I was approached by agents and publishers. I was a columnist for different publications. Back when I started in 2000 on the snowman book, I was being asked if I would do a book on something. I was a fan of Sherlock Holmes. I wanted to do like a mystery, but I knew I didn't want to do like a negative mystery. I also had an obsession with snow. I wasn't going to be like, who told the first joke or who made the first sandwich, but I thought, who made the first snowman? As I went to the bookstores, I learned that there really wasn't a book out there either. The people who wanted like a non-denominational book, something that wasn't religious. So I thought, well, maybe this would be a really great mystery to explore. And that started my personal holy grail that lasted about 7 years. And I traveled around the world. I had a dream team of experts helping me. There was art historians and professors in cultural history. And I had the leading archaeologists helping me in regards to whether or not snowmen were made by cavemen. Was it something that prehistoric man made? So I kind of stumbled on this subject like that. I approached it as something like a challenge. That's how I began.
And what did you learn about the first snowman?
There's all different first snowmen. I could not find exactly when man first made that very first snowman, because I'm sure it was long melted somewhere 25,000 years ago. But I did find documentation on the earliest snowman that was recorded. Examples would be an illuminated manuscript dated 1380 that I found at the Royal Library at The Hague. There's an anti-Semitic illustration of a snowman alongside a solemn passage that's in a Bible. And that's like the earliest actual physical evidence I could find. Now, I also found from 7th century northern China some religious papers that indicate that worshippers could make their Buddha out of materials including wood, sand, and snow, which sort of indicates that they were making Buddhas out of snow. So there's little hints here and there, but it's very hard to pinpoint to the exact snowman, but I did come up with a very rich history of the snowman, and I proved that the snowman was actually way more popular back in the Dark Ages when it was almost like an early form of pornography and an early form of political commentary. How that came about is that I learned there were things like the miracle of 1511, these events in which everyone in the town would go out and make these depictions, these snow scenes that included their local politicians and people from church and have sexual graphic scenes. And this is a way they could express themselves in a time that most people didn't have reading glasses. There wasn't books. All of a sudden, this was an opportunity for people to express themselves. They had snow, and it was like free art supplies dumped in their front doorstep. So you had like a Woodstock, and people would go crazy making these scenes. One example was the Miracle of 1511 includes over 100 different scenes in the town of Brussels in which people had a chance to make this artistic endeavor And it was a very exciting time and an example of when snowman making was not just child's play, but was way more. It was an artistic form. Hmm. And that's my contention with my studies. I was trying to prove that snowman making was indeed one of the few things we might have shared with our ancestors, and it was one of the oldest forms of folk art.
Well, very good. My guest is Bob Eckstein. He is an expert on the snowman. You know, being a snowman expert is kind of a special niche, and there are so many different types of snowmen, aren't there?
There are. It used to be that it was a very serious thing. There was like famous artists who actually created snowmen, like Michelangelo. What happened was, is the snowman came along in time. It went through a period in the 1920s, which was like called like the Dean Martin years, in which the snowman became all of a sudden a pitch man for alcohol and smoking and would appear in all these images in a way that we wouldn't be so comfortable with. But he was always doing something, and he was womanizing and all this stuff. And then he went through another stage, another transformation, in which he was a child's idol. He was a hero during the holidays. That's Frosty the Snowman, which to me undid a lot of great work, because I had a lot more respect for the historic snowman and doing all these things, because he was also like a frozen Forrest Gump. He would be an image that was used, I say he, it's also she. I'm sorry for saying that, because she also has some historical moments of like the Revolution of Paris in 1870. There was a famous female snow person made that was very important to the revolution. But when I say a frozen Forrest Gump, anytime there was like sort of an advancement in technology or in entertainment and things like that, snowman was often right there in the forefront. An example would be like the very first photographs that came out in 1840 in Wales included a couple making a snowman. And this was in one of the first dozen photographs that were produced. Another example is the very first silent movies. Some of the very first of these movies included a snowman. Hmm. Same is true for the first trading cards, first greeting cards, and so forth and so on. So it's interesting how the snowman kept on popping up, and that's because it was public domain, and it was a friendly image of ourselves.
Right.
The man always has this primal instinct to make a depiction of himself, which is one of the arguments we had as to whether or not prehistoric man made snowmen. Because there's two sort of primal instincts. One was making an image, whether it's a cave painting or a sculpture or a drawing, or putting one thing on top of another thing. And that comes up with some of the earliest sculptures. Scientists actually call that style the snowman technique, in which making a some kind of a sculpture at that time out of mud is just plopping one thing on top of another thing. So there are some indicators to indicate that. And actually, even as recently as a couple of years ago, there was evidence by scientists that playfulness was a part of caveman's life. We weren't sure of that because cavemen, they assumed made artwork for religious reasons or for the sake of a hunt. But now they discover that cavemen did things just out of playfulness. They did this through the fact that they found that, like, handprints were done by children, and they surmised that, if children were doing these activities, that it was not based on an ulterior motive.
Ah, huh, very interesting. I love snowmen, which is why I wanted to do this story. My son is an artist, and I love the snowmen that he draws. There's so many different types of snowmen. Why do you think snowmen are so likable? Is it because it's something from our memories as a kid, although here in Southern California we don't have a lot of snow, or is it simply because they're simple and fun?
There's actually a couple of reasons. I realize I kind of got off the subject because I am so into snowmen. I go off on these tangents with the facts.
No, it's wonderful.
Because I was thinking that some of the things about the snowmen, I mean, there's so many different aspects of it. You had asked if all snowmen are the same, and I will add, in Japan, they make snowmen out of two balls instead of three. So that's an example of the different snowmen around the world. But it is a universal icon, only second to probably religious icons that people could recognize all around anywhere.
Right.
Anywhere you go, people know snowmen.
Right.
But why do people like snowmen so much? Well, it may be one of the very few times in your lifetime that you're going to make a life-size sculpture and do it so publicly, in which you're doing artwork that is on your front yard for everyone to see. So it's sort of a unique sort of activity for most people if they ever get a chance to make a snowman. And of course, it conjures up all the memories of growing up and doing something with the family and the holidays.
Right.
So there's a few factors that kind of trigger like that sort of happiness. I think that I'm worried that people are not going to make snowmen as much because kids are so much on their iPhones and stuff. And if you're on your iPhones, you've got to take your gloves off, and you're not making snowmen without your gloves. I hope that people don't lose touch of that. It is one of maybe the few activities we share with our ancestors.
So what I like about the snowman is I'm not a good artist, but I can remember as a child and even now that it's so easy to draw a snowman. And so that's probably why I like them. And now I love them and I appreciate their cuteness because of my son's drawing. They're very cutesy, but still they all have different characters. When you're drawing a snowman, what characteristics does your snowman have?
Okay, I have to make a confession. This is why I've done so many snowman cartoons, because they're easier to draw.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why you don't see too many cartoons I've done on stadium scenes where I have to, like, 40,000 people. It's so much easier. As a matter of fact, a person who told me the same thing was this man named Paul Coker. Paul Coker Jr. was someone I befriended for my book. I went on eBay and actually purchased his portrait that he painted while he was in college. And then I contacted him and told him that I wanted to give it to him as a gift. He was the creator of Frosty the Snowman.
Ah.
And he also did famous Hallmark greeting cards. That style might be familiar with old greeting cards. And he worked for Mad Magazine, which, in a strange chain of events, I found myself actually working for Mad Magazine after I met him, too. Unrelated, I found myself writing and doing drawings for Mad. So it was kind of a fun full circle. Just like the snowman.
Cool. My guest is Bob Eckstein. He is an expert on the snowman. He's written a couple of books, The History of the Snowman and The Illustrated History of the Snowman. And that's what we're talking about right now is a snowman, because I find them so inviting. But you didn't tell me what characteristics you put in your snowman. So does that mean, do they always have a nose? Is it always with a carrot? Do they have their arms with twigs? Or do they have different style arms? Do they have a scarf? Do they have a hat? What's your favorite snowman to draw?
Boom, boom, and boom.
Okay.
I agree. Yeah, the carrot, the hat, because it's funny. I kind of consider myself a gentleman scholar, having done all this research. And so I think it makes me look smart. Add that little monocle and that add a top hat. And, of course, the carrot is fun to do because, you know, I have a business card that's just the top hat, and I just put a dash of orange crayon for the nose.
Okay.
And then I have a quick story to share with that, is that when I was first doing this book, I had that as a business card, and I just put down snowman expert, and I had given the card to an agent, a literary agent who's well-known in New York City, and she looked at the card, and she goes, I want you as my client.
Nice.
That sold her just that business card. I teach at NYU to new writers and new artists, and I try to teach these stories of how to create your own individual voice and have a different take on things to catch the attention of a people. And that's an example of just trying to capture someone's imagination with just a unique way of approaching something.
After a quick break, I'll continue my conversation with writer, cartoonist, and snowman expert, Bob Eckstein. You're listening to Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez.
Frosty the Snowman was a jolly, happy soul, with a corncob pipe and a button nose and two eyes made out of coal.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about Frosty snowmen with Bob Eckstein, author of The History of the Snowman. So I did indicate at the beginning that you are an illustrator and a cartoonist. Were you a doodler as a kid?
No, I wasn't. And I gotta admit, I didn't really make snowmen either. I grew up in the projects. I don't remember making snowmen. I will say I like to try to make people laugh. I liked writing. And then as I progressed and I grew as a writer, I found that I wanted to illustrate my own work. And I was always interested in art per se in college, but it wasn't until like college I really got into to working. And then I improved, and I got more confident. And then on a dare, I did the cartoons, but it was much later in life that I began attempting to do the gag cartoons, which I now really enjoy doing, and I have a really great appreciation for that art form. But I, at the time, this is in 2007, after I did the Snowman project, that I was just, it was on a dare. I was taken to the New Yorker lunch for my birthday, and then I devoured all the New Yorkers that I could. I went back to the old issues and tried to learn about gag cartooning to catch up.
So I want to ask you, you mentioned the teaching thing. You can teach someone to draw or to be an illustrator, but can you teach someone to be funny?
You know, I do think that people are born funny sometimes. I think that you could teach people to be better storytellers and sort of understand and read people's minds of why people like certain things, why certain things work, why certain things don't work. But sometimes people have it that they're kind of naturally got that funny bone.
Right, right.
Everyone's got a sense of humor to some level. But you're talking about, what about on a professional level?
Right.
At what point do you say that I feel like you can do it? And, you know, the concept of comedy keeps changing as well.
Sure.
We're in a stage now that everything is so confessional that the obvious thoughts, the obvious perceptions of what makes people laugh and stuff has really been turned on its head. Yeah, it's very voyeuristic, I want to say, too. I mean, we're living in an age of Kardashians where it's very appealing to get into other people's lives. And so the storytelling component of being personal and confessional is really what drives so much of today's media. And we see it on every discipline as well.
Right.
Not just stand-ups. We even see it in the news. It's what attracts us is the details.
I wonder what a Kim Kardashian snowman would have on it to represent Kim Kardashian.
Well, as we said, it's, you know, the snowmen are naked, so they would enjoy that, very shapely. And I'm sure someone has done a Kardashian snow person already. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, let's leave it there. When I was talking about, you know, you can teach someone to draw and maybe go into the profession, and the idea is that you're selling your artwork and that's how you're making a living. As a cartoonist for years, do you remember how much your first cartoon, when you sold your first one?
Well, that's the problem I'm having, in that when I first started doing illustrations for the New York Times, I got paid about the same that I'm getting paid now.
Oh.
But my rent is not the same.
No kidding.
I did illustrations since 1983, which means I'm old. I didn't do cartoons until about 30 years later. So it's two different things, but going to illustration, really the pay rate has stayed almost the same. And, of course, there's less venues and there's less forums. And I tried to reinvent myself by coming up with ways to utilize my skill set, things like doing live drawing and doing things where I incorporate the drawing more into my reporting and actually reporting on things. An example was that I just came back from Las Vegas reviewing things. I'm on a reviewing spree because I just came out with a new book called Everyone's a Critic. It's all about criticism.
Right.
So I decided I was going to go review hotels, restaurants, and different shows, and then compile it together in an exciting way that has my drawings with the reviews written over them. And I just sent that into the New York Times, and that's another way of sort of creating a platform for myself.
Right. So you found a way to work with your skills and try and make a living at it as well.
Right.
Yeah.
And specifically about cartoons, the cartoon environment has been tough because magazines like Mad Magazine, Clothes, and Barron's, and Harvard Business Review, and many other magazines that I did cartoons for no longer run cartoons.
It's a big loss, too, because when I look at a cartoon, I'll stop and read that before I'll stop and read an ad. I don't know. Maybe the marketers of the world should be listening to this show.
I hope everyone's listening to this. I think it's a tough argument. What I've learned was, now, to get really into inside baseball, is that I know that a lot of art directors and magazines don't really enjoy putting in cartoons. Mm. They don't like cartoons as much. And they want to use the space for other things.
Right.
So it kind of fell out of flavor with some of the decision makers who do it. And then there's other causes was budget. The cartoons was a little bit pricey, and Mad Magazine folded because it was just, for them, it was very, well, it just seemed old-fashioned method doing their branding. They do everything electronically now. They don't want to really stick with print.
And I still like turning pages. I want to ask you, in the last couple of minutes that we have together, you're an advocate for independent bookstores. Why so?
I've been doing that for the last few years. I've done about 100 radio and TV interviews and appearances to try to raise awareness for independent bookstores. And I've written a lot of op-eds on the subject, trying to just point out the importance of bookstores to each of our communities. I kind of make the argument that they're the intellectual hub of our main street, and it gives an opportunity for artists to grow and for people to be introduced to books in a way that really online shopping actually can't replace. There's a different dynamic going on when you don't have a place to bring your family and your kids and introduce them to books that way, as well as beginning people like who are beginning writing, or even poets or musicians even, who are performing at these bookstores. And it kind of goes back to a theme that you've said, which is going back to old-fashioned tactile things of going to a bookstore in person in the same way that you said you like print.
Right.
Going to open
but
a
I'm
magazine.
But I'm old school.
Yeah, it's an experience that you open up. And the same thing as making a snowman. I'm always against snowman kits where you just blow up the snowman in your front yard and everyone's snowman looks the same. Or you could even buy a kit where all the elements are the same instead of going through your garage, depriving yourself the joy of looking for stupid things to make the snowman's nose and ears out of. I mean, that's part of it. It's not to have everything sort of mass-produced.
Right, but isn't that, that's also part of the experience with your mom or dad or uncle or cousin or whoever, that you're scavenging through, you know, as a scavenger going through different things to what's going to make your snowman and the memories that's going to set for, hey, remember when I made that with my Aunt Lucy? You know, we did this and we made that snowman. We couldn't find a scarf, so we used a fill-in-the-blank.
You're exactly right. And I wonder if kids really know what they're missing.
No,
if they're
they
missing,
don't.
The bookstores, for instance, so many people say, oh, you know, Amazon is so great, whatever. Online's great. And it is great, and I hope that people increase their exposure to books in that way. But it's also great to, even better, if you could support your local stores. I say this for all mom-and-pop shops, but it is a bookstore that has on the shelf hundreds of people's dreams and years of work, of sweat and toil that's on their shelves. The bookstore has that unique sort of, that whole other dimension,
right,
that there's people's dreams on those shelves.
And it's also an experience. My guest is illustrator, cartoonist, writer, and snowman expert, Bob Eckstein. Bob, I want to ask you one more question. Do you have a favorite snowman that's out there?
Wow. Asking me that question, I'm the one person who would have a zillion answers for that. There are some photographs that I have seen of snowmen that are just amazing. I have a new book because of that. The new book, Illustrated History of the Snowman, it's filled with lots of photographs of snowmen, my favorite. And to me, it was like I spared no expense. This was going to be the most lush production I can have, so I could say I did exactly that. And if you ask me tomorrow, I'll have another answer. But right now, with a gun to my head, I'm going to say that my favorite snowman, there's one that's made on the top of the Swiss Alps. There's a famous circular hotel that we all have seen in a James Bond movie, and it's on the top of like a mountain. And there's one snowman that was made by my friend who's a famous director in France, and he sent me this picture of a snowman that's fantastic, and it's a big, beautiful illustration photograph in the new book. And I'll pick that one for today. But I love all snowmen. It's such a hard, you're asking me to pick my favorite child.
Exactly. I get it. Bob, it's been great speaking with you. Thank you so much for your time, and it was great talking snowmen with you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
To learn more about Bob Eckstein and the history of the snowman, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on today's show. Holidays can be a time for tradition. This year, traditions can be challenging. Here's my family's typical holiday tradition, not counting this year. We decorate our Christmas tree on the first Friday in December. It's always in noble fir, a tradition that started when I was a little girl with my parents. My mom, dad, and daughter, and her husband, my son, and my husband are all present to participate. I put on the Christmas music and make some hot chocolate, some with Kahlua and some without. My husband brings the tree in and sets it up, sometimes a little crooked, although that's debatable. My son-in-law Brandon is assigned to putting on the strings of lights. My husband was thrilled when Brandon took over this assignment. When the lights are up, my daughter Lindsay and my son Grant hang all the ornaments. And then Grant always likes to add big candy canes to the tree. I add all the gold bows, and it's complete. Then we sit down with our hot chocolate and watch It's a Wonderful Life. My daughter and I recite the dialogue. We just can't help it. Spoiler alert, we both walk out of the room when Uncle Billy loses the $8,000. Neither of us can get through the movie without shedding a few tears. It's a tradition I hope to carry on, and I'm hoping to give my grandsons, Max and now Tyler, an assignment next year. That's our show for this week. To hear any of our past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. You can also listen to Lifestyles on iTunes or Spotify. Search for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez on your streaming service and take the show on the go. I'm a big fan of Broadway. I love show tunes, and the theater is the one thing I truly miss during this pandemic. So I'd like to bring some Broadway show tunes to an upcoming segment on Lifestyles. I've been asking you, our listeners, to share a favorite Broadway musical with me, why it's a favorite, and one of the songs from the show. Some of you have started sharing, but I'd like to hear from more listeners. Share your favorite Broadway musical with me at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. I know this is a tough task. I certainly couldn't do it. I can narrow it to my top 10. Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including Sharina Wadd, David Fleming, Sean Houlihan, Andrew Caravella, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Our theme music is provided by Ethan Bortnick. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. Have the best Christmas possible under the current circumstances, and please stay safe. And bye for now.
That's right. That's right.
Attaboy, Clarence.